Sahanavavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay. Page 7. Dadichi continued, If one is unhappy to see the distress of other living beings and happy to see their happiness, his religious principles are appreciated as imperishable by exalted persons who are considered pious and benevolent. Verse 9, Srila Prabhupada comments, One generally follows different types of religious principles or performs various occupational duties according to the body given to him by the modes of material nature. In this verse, however, real religious principles are explained. Everyone should be unhappy to see others in distress and happy to see others happy. Atmavat sarva bhuteshu. One should feel the happiness and distress of others as his own. It is on this basis that the Buddhist religious principle of nonviolence, ahimsa, paramadharma, is established. We feel pain when someone disturbs us, and therefore we should not inflict pain upon other living beings. Lord Buddha's mission was to stop unnecessary animal killing, and therefore he preached. The greatest religious principle is nonviolence. One cannot continue killing animals and at the same time be a religious man. That is the greatest hypocrisy. Jesus Christ said, do not kill. But hypocrites nevertheless maintain thousands of slaughterhouses while posing as Christians. Such hypocrisy is condemned in this verse. One should be happy to see others happy, and one should not be unhappy. And one should be unhappy to see others unhappy. This is the principle to be followed. Unfortunately, at the present moment, so-called philanthropists and humanitarians advocate the happiness of humanity at the cost of the lives of poor animals. That is not recommended herein. This verse clearly says that one should be compassionate to all living entities, regardless of whether human, animal, tree, or plant. All living entities are sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A Vaishnava, therefore, is a truly perfect person because he laments to see others unhappy and feels joy at seeing others happy. A Vaishnava is para dukkha dukkhi. He is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls in an unhappy state of materialism. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always busy preaching Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Right? So then, you have the general principle of happiness and distress, and being unhappy when others are unhappy, being happy when they're happy. Then you have the highest principle, the actual happiness, is being Krishna conscious. And being within material consciousness, that will make the living entity unhappy. Right? He'll have his moments of happiness, but he's always going to become unhappy, because that's just the way the material nature works. So, therefore, one is always trying to make people Krishna conscious. Right? You deal with what's going on now, but the actual point is, if you don't do the long term, then how have you actually made people happy? Dadichi continued, This body, which is eatable by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul, is usable only for a short time and may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches and relatives, must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else they will be sources of tribulation and misery. Verse 10, Srila Prabhupada comments. Similar advice is also given in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:22-35. Etavaj janma safalyam dehinam iha dehishu. Praner arter dhya vacha shreya archanam sada. Archaranam sada. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. The whole idea is that if we're always being engaged in the Lord's service, that means we're always working for someone else's benefit. Right? So therefore, the Lord and anyone connected to the Lord, that's how we're functioning. Right? So that practice is done here by here performing our duties in connection with others. Does that make sense? So if the Lord's not included, then it's sentimental, though it's better than not doing something for others. But the actual point is to connect it to the Lord. Right? So. That's right. This is the mission of life. One's own body and the bodies of his friends and relatives, as well as one's own riches and everything else one has, should be engaged for the benefit of others. Of course, in human society, there are many institutions to help others. But because philanthropists do not know how to help others, the propensity for philanthropy is ineffectual. They do not know the ultimate goal of life, Shreya Archaranam, which is to please the Supreme Lord. If all philanthropic and humanitarian activities are directed towards achieving the ultimate goal of life, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they would all be perfect. Humanitarian work without Krishna is nothing. Krishna must be brought to the center of all our activities, otherwise no activity will have value. Because one does some humanitarian work, but the point is whatever benefit you've given, that will all be lost. So actually the soul, who's actually the person that's supposed to be assisted, gains nothing. So we're actually assisting the soul. And in doing that, there may be benefits for the subtle and gross body and environment that the soul is in. Right? But if we only benefit that environment and the body, then actually we've done no real philanthropic work. It'll all be lost. Right? Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Dadichi Muni, the son of Atharva, thus resolved to give his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way gave up his gross material body made of five elements. Footnote 1. Srila Prabhupada comments, Sri Ramanuja Swami, in his book Vedanta Tattvasar, has described that this merging of the soul means that after separating himself from the material body, made of eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, mind, and intelligence, the individual soul engages himself in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his eternal form. Right? So it's not that he merges in the Lord. He then, in his spirit, he gives up the material form and then in his spiritual form serves. Okay. Dadichi Muni controlled his senses, life force, mind, and intelligence, and became absorbed in trance. Thus he cut off all his material bonds. He could not perceive how his material body became separated from the self. Right? It's because he's fully absorbed in the Lord, he doesn't even notice how the soul is separated from the body. So for the self-realized soul, technically there is no death because they don't even notice it happened. Right? They just are in the spiritual world. You know, Prabhupada gave the example of someone's there and like nod off to sleep, then wake up and, oh, it's the spiritual world. Like that. So, that's our process. And then Ajam Eel, he shows what's the general process for most living entities. Slightly different. Srila Prabhupada comments, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 8.5, Anta Kale Chamam eva smaram muktva kalevaram yaf prayati samadbhavam yati nashtyatara samshaya. Whoever at the time of death quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Right, so me alone. That's why he says he cut off. Thus he cut off all his material bonds. So it's just Krishna alone. Right? Okay. Whoever at the time of death quits his body remembering me alone at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. Of course, one must practice before one is overcome by death. But the perfect yogi, namely the devotee, dies in trance, thinking of Krishna. He does not feel his material body being separated from his soul. The soul is immediately transferred to the spiritual world. So he doesn't notice it. The karma is because of their attachments, then being separated from the body is going to be a problem because the body is where all the attachments are applied. Because if you separate from that body, you have no connection with all your attachments. You may have attachment, but it's been expressed through the body and what's connected to the body. Right? So losing the body will be a painful experience. Right? So that's the difficulty. But for the devotee, because he's in trance remembering the Lord, therefore there's no pain because he doesn't even notice separation from the body because there's nothing from the body that's important to maintain. Does that make sense? Verses 13 to 33. So to the spiritual world means where the Lord is performing his pastimes. Yes. Yeah, like that. Point is it should be something transcendental, not your hamster or parakeet or your bank balance or whether you turned off the gas. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Verses 13 to 33. The demigods attack Vritrasura. In verses 13 to 33, Lord Indra and the demigods, with renewed confidence, enthusiastically approach Vritrasura and the other demons for battle. And although the Asuras showered torrents of arrows, spears, tridents, rocks, and mountaintops upon them, the demigods were able to pulverize these weapons in mid-air. When the demons saw that their vast inundation of missiles were being easily dispatched by the devatas, they began to flee in fear. Vritrasura, however, encouraged the Asuras to stay and fight, explaining that even if a warrior dies in battle, such a death is glorious. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. Thereafter, King Indra very firmly took up the thunderbolt manufactured by Vishwakarma from the bones of Dadichi. Charged with the exalted power of Dadichi Muni and enlightened by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Indra rode on the back of his carrier, Airavata, surrounded by all the demigods, while all the great sages offered him praise. Thus he shone very brilliantly, pleasing the three worlds as he rode off to kill Vritrasura. My dear King Parikit, as Rudra, being very angry at Antaka, Yamaraj, had formerly run towards Antaka to kill him, Indra angrily and with great force attacked Vritrasura, who was surrounded by the leaders of the demoniac armies. 13 to 15. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Paryashtam means surrounded by. Shiva is capable of killing Yamaraj. Similarly, Indra is capable of killing Vritrasura. Right. So surrounded by the demigods means he could do it on his own, but they all go out together. Yes. He kills everybody else. You know, Yamaraj, everyone's going to die anyway. So it's not that he couldn't. So he did something that made him upset. What that story is, I don't know. It hasn't come up. But like that. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, thereafter, at the end of Satya Yuga and the beginning of Treta Yuga, a fierce battle took place between the demigods and the demons on the bank of the Narmada. 16. Srila Prabhupada comments, herein the Narmada does not mean the Narmada River in India. The five sacred rivers in India, Ganga, Jamuna, Narmada, Kaveri, and Krishna, are all celestial. Like the Ganges River, the Narmada River also flows in the higher planetary systems. The battle between the demigods and the demons took place in the higher planets. The word Pratame Yuge means in the beginning of the first millennium, that is to say, in the beginning of the Vaibhasvata Manvantara. In one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus, who each live for 71 millenniums. The four yugas, Satya, Treta, Dvapara, and Kali, constitute one millennium. We are presently in the Manvantara Vaivasvatamana, whose mention in Bhagavad Gita, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Yaham Avyayam, Vivasvan Manyabe Praha, Bhagavad Gita 4.1. We are now in the 28th millennium of Vaivasvata Manu, but this fight took place at the beginning of Vaivasmatu's first millennium. We can historically calculate how long ago the battle took place, since each millennium consists of 4,300,000 years, and we are now in the 28th millennium. Some 120,400,000 years have passed since the battle took place on the bank of the river Narmada. Give or take a little here and there. So, because by the Vedics, there's always the thing of, how can we be satisfied there's no timing given? Right? So now, will that academic who is so upset and distraught that there's no thing, if I tell him, okay, yes, it happened 120,400,000 years ago on the bank of the Narmada and the celestial planets, he's going to be satisfied now? Now he's going to go, oh, okay, now I can relate. So the point is it's just talk. They're not going to accept anything anyway. Doesn't matter what you say. Therefore, we don't even try that method. It's a waste of time. What we do is teach them about the Supreme and their connection to it. That much we can do. And if they want time and all that, hey, go read a history book. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. Right? It's not that we can't calculate it, it's just that if you did, it wouldn't matter. Like, we can tell you what day of the week, at what time, in what year Kali Yuga started. Right? Starts on a particular day at a certain time. So we can tell that, but is that going to make them happy? No, so therefore, why waste your time? O king, when all the Asuras came onto the battlefield, headed by Vritrasura, they saw King Indra carrying the thunderbolt and surrounded by the Rudras, Vasus, Adityas, Ashvini Kumaras, Pitas, Vahinis, Maruts, Ribhus, Sadyas, and Vishwadevas. Surrounded by his company, Indra shone so brightly that his effulgence was intolerable to the demons. Many hundreds and thousands of demons, demi-demons, yakshas, rakshasas, man-eaters, and others, headed by Sumali and Mali, resisted the armies of King Indra, which even death personified cannot easily overcome. Yes? Demi-demons. I have no idea. Huh? They must be smaller demons. You know, you have the asuras, and then they must be some smaller or simpler form. You'd have to look in there. See what the Sanskrit says. Sorry? Well, it might. Maybe you've heard the name before. Among the demons were Namuchi, Sambara, Anarva, Dvi Murdha, Rishabha, Asura, Hayagriva, Shankushira, Viprachiti, Ayomukha, Puloma, Vrishaparva, Vaheti, Heti, and Utkala. Right, we've heard about Viprachiti, but who is that? Puloma, Vrishaparva. He's one of the main kings. I think Vrishaparva, he's... Sharmishta, I think. Sharmishta. Was Sharmishta Devayani, who married Yayati? So, Shukracharya stays in his place. And Vishaparva's daughter then was married along with Devayani to Yayati. Yeah, so these things. And I think Namuchi is the foam demon. He can also become foam, so it's really hard to kill a bunch of foam. Roaring tumultuously and fearlessly like lions, these invincible demons, all dressed in golden ornaments, gave pain to the demigods with weapons like clubs, bludgeons, arrows, barbed darts, mallets, and lances. Armed with lances, tridents, axes, swords, and other weapons like Shatagnis and Bhushundis, the demons attacked from different directions and scattered all the chiefs of the demigod armies. Footnote 2. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out, Shatagni is a weapon, 4 hastas in length, with iron spikes. Bhushundi is a weapon with prominently arranged iron spikes. Okay, so the Shatagni, is you have something that's basically a little less than 2 meters long, about 180, right, or 6 feet, and on the end must be all kinds of spikes. But it seems that it's a little bit smaller spikes, but it's probably many, many, many spikes. So therefore, Shatagni. You know, Shata, I think, can mean 100 or, 1,000. You know, so lots of spikes. Then the other one seems to be iron spikes. So it's just big spikes and that, like some kind of a club kind of thing. Does that make sense? As the stars in the sky cannot be seen when covered by dense clouds, the demigods, being completely covered by networks of arrows falling upon them one after another, could not be seen. 17-24. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Punkha is the feather end of the arrow. The arrows fell so that one arrowhead followed exactly next to the feather end of the previous arrow. Though the arrows covered the devas like clouds covering the stars, the arrows could not touch the devatas, just as the clouds do not touch the stars. Right? So they were so many that they were just covered. And when they're shooting here, it's not that there's one and then there's, you know, not, then another volley. It's that one arrow is there immediately behind it, touching the feathers is the next arrow. They could shoot arrows that fast. Just want to make sure, right? Because you're shooting into a crowd, so.
When they die, the demigods, because most of the guys are in the heavenly planets.
They're not in the heavenly planets. They're on the battlefield.
Is that on Earth?
No, this is in between.
So there they can die?
They just, in the heavenly planet itself, no one dies.
So when they're on the battlefield, they
could
die?
They could die, yeah. But, you know, they have their nectar and their physicians and that, so generally it's not, doesn't seem to be necessarily a major aspect, at least not the main ones. But it just means that they're there, they don't die, they just disappear from the place. So if you're sitting talking to the guy and he suddenly falls through the earth, then, you know, that's it. So he'll die in the space between heaven and earth. Appears so. I mean, time runs out, that's it. You know, death is that sudden, so it's just they fall through the planet that suddenly. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. The showers of various weapons and arrows released to kill the soldiers of the demigods did not reach them because the demigods, acting quickly, cut the weapons into thousands of pieces in the sky. As their weapons and mantras decreased, the demons began showering mountain peaks, trees, and stones upon the demigod soldiers. But the demigods were so powerful and expert that they nullified all these weapons by breaking them to pieces in the sky as before. Right, so now that they have the blessings of the Lord and all that, then everything's working nicely. And when they offend their guru twice, things don't work out so good. Right? When the soldiers of the demons, commanded by Vritrasura, saw that the soldiers of King Indra were quite well, having not been injured at all by their volleys of weapons, not even by the trees, stones, and mountain peaks. Okay, so, you know, you don't get it by hit by an arrow, right? It's only so big. But a mountain peak falling on your head, you know, it's like, you know, we're not talking about pebbles here. We're talking about mountain peaks. So we're talking about something, you know, one of them's big enough to crush, you know, an army. So, The demons were very much afraid. When insignificant persons use rough words to cast false, angry accusations against saintly persons, the fruitless words do not disturb the great personalities. Similarly, all the efforts of the demons against the demigods, who are favorably situated under the protection of Krishna, were futile. Srila Prabhupada comments. There is a Bengali saying that if a vulture curses a cow to die, the curse will not be effective. Similarly, accusations made by demoniac persons against devotees of Krishna cannot have any effect. The demigods are devotees of Lord Krishna, and therefore the curses of the demons were futile. You know the Bengali saying? No? Sri Sukadev continued. Right, so a person with no qualities, they currently won't have effect on someone who has greater qualities. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. The Asuras, who were never devotees of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, lost their pride in fighting when they found all their endeavors futile. Leaving aside their leader, even in the very beginning of the fight, they decided to flee because all their prowess had been taken away by the enemy. Seeing his army broken and all the Asuras, even those known as great heroes, fleeing the battlefield, right? Because everybody left. Because these others, they're known as great persons. These names that were mentioned, those are the great personalities. Right? So even they were going. Seeing his army broken and all the Asuras, even those known as great heroes, fleeing the battlefield out of immense fear, Vritrasura, who was truly a great-minded hero, smiled and spoke the following words. According to his position and the time and circumstance, Vritrasura, the hero amongst heroes, spoke words that were much to be appreciated by thoughtful men. He called to the heroes of the demons, O Viprachiti, O Namuchi, O Puloma, O Maya, O Anarva, and Sambara, please hear me and do not flee. 29-30. Vritrasura said, All living entities who have taken birth in this material world must die. Surely no one in this world has found any means to be saved from death. Even Providence has not provided a means to escape it. Under the circumstances, death being inevitable, if one can gain promotion to the higher planetary systems and be always celebrated here by dying a suitable death, what man will not accept such a glorious death? There are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. One is to die after performing mystic yoga, especially bhakti yoga, by which one can control the mind and living force and die absorbed in thoughts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The second is to die on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. These two kinds of death are recommended in the Shastra as glorious. In his purport to verse 32, Srila Prabhupada comments, Everyone should be ready to die while performing glorious deeds. A glorious person is not meant to meet death like cats and dogs, or like run over by a truck or something. So he's showing that this is glorious. Right, either on the spiritual platform you're absorbed in the Lord, that way then that's a glorious death, or on the material platform you die in the proper performance of your duty. Right? So here the Kshatriya is on the battlefield or like this. That's glory. In other words, for a higher purpose. Important verses 6:10-8. O Dhruvenat Mana Natha Na Dharmam Na Yasha Yashaf Puman Iheta Bhuta Dayaya Na Shochyas Sta Virer Api. O demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity in its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principle or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by the immovable beings, right? So the higher causes of religious, you could say higher causes meaning religious principles themselves, or the higher causes of religious principles, which means the connection to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.10.8. Right? Because the immovable beings, they can't move. But human being can move, and then they don't do anything worthwhile with their life. So they're actually worse than you know, the stones. 6.10.9. So that was spoken by Dedichi Muni. Etavan avyayo dharma punyashloker upasita yo bhuta shoka harshabhyam atma sochati hrishyati. If one is unhappy to see the distress of other living beings and happy to see their happiness, his religious principles are appreciated as imperishable by exalted persons who are considered pious and benevolent. So imperishable then means has to be on the transcendental platform. But in other words, even on the material platform, you look at it for the materialist, imperishable just means a long time. So they talk about heavenly rewards or pious rewards that are imperishable. Of course it will perish, but it's after such a long time that you don't really worry about it. You know, like grains of sand on the beach. You know, there's a limited amount, but it's you don't really worry about it. Then chapter 11, the transcendental qualities of Ritrasura, Pratigya. Ritrasura, being an unalloyed devotee, aspired only to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Pratigya of this chapter is taken from Srila Prabhupada's purport to verse 23 and is further elaborated on in his purport to verse 22. The Lord was actually more favorable to Ritrasura because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Ritrasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. Yes. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. So one was a pure devotee, wanted to come and eternally serve the Lord. The other one wanted the Lord to give him his material positions back, which he got. And he stays in the material world. So everybody gets what they want. Chapter 9 summarizes questions and answers. The rhetorical questions uttered by Ritrasura while addressing Indra, the Devatas, and the Supreme Lord do not fall under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. In the 11th chapter, the words of Ritrasura during the battle reveal his bravery and to some extent his prema. Because he's on the battlefield, so therefore it's a battle, so there will be those elements of you know, glory of the Dharma. But at the same time, as being a devotee, you can't totally hide that, even though that's not, the demigods are devotees, but they're not so much worried about pure devotion. So something will be revealed, but not so much. Now, if they had come to him and asked, if the demigods had come to him to ask him to explain pure devotional service, then he would have explained so much more. This chapter describes Ritrasura's great qualities. When the prominent commanders of the demons fled, not hearing Ritrasura's advice, Ritrasura condemned them all as cowards. Speaking very bravely, he stood alone to face the demigods. When the demigods saw Ritrasura's attitude, they were so afraid that they practically fainted, and Ritrasura began trampling them down. Remember, Krishna said he could destroy all the three worlds himself. But because he's a devotee, that's not his interest. He has the power, but he's not going to use it like that. So in other words, he'll only use how much power is necessary on the battlefield. But actually, because he knows it's Krishna's plan that the demigods win and get back their position, then, you know, it's just putting up a good fight. You don't go out with, you know, how you say? Going out with a bang. Heard this phrase, you know, so it's, you know. Going to make it good, right? Unable to tolerate this, Indra, the king of heaven, threw his club at Ritrasura, but Ritrasura was such a great hero that he easily caught the club with his left hand and used it to beat Indra's elephant, right? So left hand means he could have caught it with the right hand, but he catched it with the left just to show that it's no big deal. Right? Struck by the blow of Ritrasura, the elephant was pushed back 14 yards and fell with Indra on his back. You know, so 14 yards, basically like, you know, 13 or 12 meters. You know, so quite a long ways. King Indra had first accepted Vishwarup as his priest and thereafter killed him. Reminding Indra of his heinous activities, Vritrasura said, "If one is a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, and depends upon Lord Vishnu in every respect, then victory, opulence, and peace of mind are all inevitably available. Such a person has nothing for which to aspire in the three worlds," right? Because you have the Lord, so what do you need? "The Supreme Lord is so kind that he especially favors such a devotee by not giving him opulence that will hamper his devotional service. Therefore, I wish to give up everything for the service of the Lord. I wish always to chant the glories of the Lord and engage in his service. Let me become unattached to my worldly family and make friendships with the devotees of the Lord. I do not desire to be promoted to the higher planetary systems, even to Dhruva Loka or Brahma Loka. Nor do I desire an unconquerable position within this material world. I have no need for such things." Shloka Anusharanam, summary verses. Verses 1 to 12. Vritrasura single-handedly defeats the Devatas. 13 to 27, Vritrasura's instructions and prayers, right? So all the demons together attack the demigods twice, and they're defeated. So they run away. And Vritrasura, just on his own, he defeats them. Basically, he just steps on them. He doesn't even have to really do much else. Verses 1 to 12. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, "O King, Vritrasura, the commander-in-chief of the demons, advised his lieutenants in the principles of religion, but the cowardly demoniac commanders, intent upon fleeing the battlefield, were so disturbed by fear they could not accept his words. O King Parikit, the demigods, taking advantage of a favorable opportunity presented by time, attacked the army of the demons from the rear and began driving away the demoniac soldiers, scattering them here and there as if their army had no leader. Seeing the pitiable condition of his soldiers, Vritrasura, the best of the Asuras, who was called Indra Shatru, the enemy of Indra, was very much aggrieved. Unable to tolerate such reverses, he stopped and forcibly rebuked the demigods, speaking the following words in an angry mood. O demigods, these demoniac soldiers have taken birth uselessly. Indeed, they have come from the bodies of their mothers exactly like stool. What is the benefit of killing such enemies from behind while they are running in fear?" Right? There's no glory. You know, there's a glory in fighting someone face to face and defeating him, but they're running away in fear already without weapons, and then you're attacking them. You know, it's just like, what's the big deal? Right? You know, it's like dogs. You know, you stand there, they stand there, but if you run, then they'll chase you. Right? You know, yeah. "One who considers himself a hero should not kill an enemy who is afraid of losing his life. Such killing is never glorious, nor can it promote one to the heavenly planets." Right, so Manu mentions this. It's someone who surrenders, someone who has no weapons, someone who's running in fear, right? Like this, that they're not to be attacked. Srila Prabhupada comments, "Vritrasura rebuked both the demigods and the demoniac soldiers because the demons were running in fear of their lives and the demigods were killing them from behind. The actions of both were abominable. When a fight takes place, the opposing parties must be prepared to fight like heroes. A hero never runs from the field of battle. He always fights face to face, determined to gain victory or lay down his life in the fight. That is heroic. Killing an enemy from behind is also inglorious. When an enemy turns his back and runs in fear of his life, he should not be killed. This is the etiquette of military science." Right? So this is your standard. So therefore, innocent persons, the bystanders, those who are only assisting, like that, the citizens, none of these are killed. But you see in this modern kind of environment, then, you know, if there's an advantage can be taken, it will be taken, and so many persons that should not be killed are. So this is the inglorious nature of, you know, the modern era. Vritrasura continued, "O insignificant demigods, if you truly have faith in your heroism, if you have patience in the cores of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification, please stand before me for a moment." Right? So he's saying about how they should behave in battle, but also he's showing here, they have faith in your heroism. you have patience in the cores of your hearts, and if you are not ambitious for sense gratification. Right? So these are all things that, unfortunately, they have a problem with. So, but he's pointing out these are real heroes. Great heroes are those that, you know, they fight because it's their duty and this like that. They're fighting, the position as demigods to, you know, properly control the universe. But at the same time, as we see, is there's ambition on their own part. Right? So it's not as glorious. Otherwise, why are they chasing the demons? They feel the demons have given them so much trouble, they're trying to give something back. Rather than, they came there to defend, they defeated them, and so then they're gone. Point is it doesn't matter as long as they stay on their side of Bhumandala. Right? You don't come this side. Right. That's the right. Now, and the point, the heroism, then it's a rasa. The whole thing is about living entities interacting with each other based on the principles of rasa. It's not on what material gain will be gotten. That gain is simply to be used in the pursuance of rasa. Of rasa, transcendental is the actual position. Right? But it's expressed. Means the medium it'll be used will be the forms that look like their swargi or partiva rasa. Right? You make nice cooked food for Krishna, so it's, you know, it appears to be partiva rasa, but it's transcendental. Does that make sense? We do things nicely for Krishna, so here they're being heroic for Krishna. So Vritrasura is. So this is transcendental rasa. For the demigods, then it started off as Swargiya Rasa, but now, because they're killing the demons from behind, now it's fallen down into Partiva Rasa. Right? So it'll just be, you know, envy, attachment, these kind of things. Vritrasura continued. Oh, insignificant demigod. Oh, okay, we said it. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. Rebuking the demigods, Vritrasura challenged. Oh, demigods, if you are actually heroes, stand before me now and try to show your prowess. If you do not wish to fight, if you are afraid of losing your lives, I shall not kill you. For, unlike you, I am not so evil-minded as to kill persons who are neither heroic nor willing to fight. If you have faith in your heroism, please stand before me. Right? So if you're here, you know, have, you know, heroic, then stand and fight. And if you're not, then leave. Right? Don't make a show that you're the great heroes by chasing and killing people who are afraid of their lives. Sugadeva Goswami said, Vritrasura, the angry and most powerful hero, terrified the demigods with his stout and strongly built body. When he roared with a resounding voice, nearly all living entities fainted. When all the demigods heard Vritrasura's tumultuous roar, which resembled that of a lion, they fainted and fell to the ground as if struck by thunderbolts. As the demigods closed their eyes in fear, Vritrasura, taking up his trident and making the earth tremble with his great strength, trampled the demigods beneath his feet on the battlefield, the way a mad elephant tramples hollow bamboos in the forest. Seeing Vritrasura's disposition, Indra, the king of heaven, became intolerant and threw at him one of his great clubs, which are extremely difficult to counteract. Right? Because before this, he always used the club. That was his weapon. Now he's been given the thunderbolt. So when he comes out and they're very confident and everything's normal, then he may be using the thunderbolt, but it doesn't specifically say. But now when it comes to a moment where things aren't going well for him, right, and he, you know, becomes very intolerant and he fights, he resorts back to his own weapon rather than the weapon that Vishnu gave him that said, this will kill him. Vishnu didn't say, your club will kill him. Otherwise, they already tried before, it didn't work, so why would he try again? That's foolish. Right? It's the thunderbolt, that's what's going to kill him, because Vishnu said. But that faith is lacking. That's why he said before, if you have faith, then let's fight. However, as the club flew towards him, Vritrasura easily caught it with his left hand. O King Parikit, the powerful Vritrasura, the enemy of King Indra, angrily struck the head of Indra's elephant with that club, making a tumultuous sound on the battlefield. For this heroic deed, the soldiers on both sides glorified him. Struck with the club by Vritrasura like a mountain struck by a thunderbolt. The elephant, Airavata, feeling great pain and spitting blood from his broken mouth, was pushed back 14 yards. In great distress, the elephant fell with Indra on his back. When he saw Indra's carrier elephant thus fatigued and injured, and when he saw Indra morose because his carrier had been harmed in that way, the great soul Dhritasura, following religious principles, refrained from again striking Indra with the club.
Right? So he's following the principles, right? The demigods didn't. So he rebuked them for that. So now seeing his fighting, now we see the demons have fled, but it doesn't mean that they've gone totally away. Because especially when the demigods stop trying to kill them, then they'll stop and watch the fight. In the same way as the demigods have been defeated, so now it's just Indra and Dhritasura. Now the demigods are watching. Now, for his prowess, then the both sides are glorifying. Right? Because they both know what is their religious principles. They both know what is proper fighting. So when it's done right and with great heroism, then both sides will appreciate. It's not that the enemy does something wrong and then he says, that's nothing. No, it's appreciated. Like that. It doesn't mean that you give up the fight.
Taking this opportunity, Indra touched the elephant with his nectar-producing hand, thus relieving the animal's pain and curing its injuries, right? So otherwise in the fight, he wouldn't have time for this. So because he stopped the fight, then he took the opportunity to cure the elephant. Then the elephant and Indra both stood silently. Verses 13 to 27, Dhritasura's instructions and prayers. In verses 13 to 27, Dhritasura, seeing the murder of his brother standing before him, began to antagonize Lord Indra in order to resume the fated battle, right? Because there's supposed to be this battle. He's supposed to be killed in the battle. That was the whole thing. Because if they're now defeated, what's the whole point of all that? They went to Vishnu, did this whole thing, went to Dadichi, got his bones, got the thunderbolt, and now they're not going to kill him? What's going on here? Right? So therefore, he's trying to invoke, you know, his fighting spirit, so again the battle will continue. After criticizing Indra for killing his own guru, Dhritasura pledged that after slaying Indra with his trident, he would similarly dispatch anyone else who fights on Indra's behalf. Dhritasura further explained that if he instead should be slain by Indra, that he would finally be freed from his karma and would thus attain the association of great Vaishnavas. Encouraging Indra to cease his attempts in gaining... Encouraging Indra to cease his attempts in gaining victory by his own prowess, Dhritasura instructed Indra to follow the Lord's instructions by using the divine weapon, which was surcharged with the power of Lord Vishnu, specifically made for killing him. Because Indra is trying by his own prowess to defeat him. That's the materialistic problem. He thought, no, I can do this. But actually, they couldn't do this before. They went to Lord Vishnu. So it's only by Vishnu's grace can he be killed. Because Dhritasura could devour the three worlds, so there's no one technically there who's that powerful. So it's only by Krishna's grace he can be killed. So Indra has to remember that. He always, we see, because of his position, he gets easily distracted. After preaching to Indra about the destinations of both the pure Bhaktas and the Mr. Bhaktas, Dhritasura expressed his desire to be slain by that special thunderbolt, so he could return to the service of the Supreme Lord. Thus the powerful and righteous Brahmana, Dhritasura, prepared himself for death by praying that his mind and consciousness be fully fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
There would be most likely that aspect, but also just how he thinks, he talks, everything, it's like a Brahmin. But Chitraketu was a king. But the point is his mentality is that of a Brahmin. You know, he may, you know this, he's born as a demon, his duty is to, you know, fight with Indra, like that. So he's performing his duties, but he's situated on the Brahman platform. So actually he's transcendental. So that's why Varnashram only defines what duties you're performing. It doesn't define your mentality. Right? stuff.
Sugadeva Goswami continued, O king, when the great hero Vritrasura saw Indra, his enemy, the killer of his brother, standing before him with a thunderbolt in his hand, desiring to fight, Vritrasura remembered how Indra had cruelly killed his brother. Thinking of Indra's sinful activities, he became mad with lamentation and forgetfulness. Laughing sarcastically, he spoke as follows. Verse 13. Sri Vritrasura said, He who has killed a brahmana, he who has killed his spiritual master, indeed, he who has killed my brother, is now by good fortune standing before me, face to face as my enemy. Right? So killing a brahmana, killing a spiritual master, these are all both bad things, right? That. Oh, most abominable one, when I pierce your stone-like heart with my trident, I shall be freed from my debt to my brother. Only for the sake of living in the heavenly planets, you killed my elder brother, a self-realized, sinless, qualified brahmana who had been appointed your chief priest. Right? So it was only because they were worried the demons would come. But because he killed him, that's when the demons came. If you just let them there, then they would have been in their position. There would have been no Vritrasura. They would have gone on happily. Right. He was your spiritual master, but although you entrusted him with the performance of your sacrifice, you later mercilessly severed his head from his body the way one butchers an animal. Indra, you are bereft of all shame, mercy, glory, and good fortune. Deprived of these good qualities by the reactions of your fruit of activities, you are to be condemned even by the man-eaters, the Rakshasas. Right? Because the Rakshasas have their priests. They don't cut their heads off or eat them. Right? You know, so it's like... Now I shall pierce your body with my trident, and after you die with great pain, even fire will not touch you. Only the vultures will eat your body. Right? Simply because he's so sinful. Right, he doesn't deserve, you know, to go through the normal procedures. You are naturally cruel. If the other demigods, unaware of my prowess, follow you by attacking me with raised weapons, I shall sever their heads with this sharp trident. With those heads, I shall perform a sacrifice to Bhairava and the other leaders of the ghosts, along with their hordes. But if, in this battle, you cut off my head with your thunderbolt and kill my soldiers, O Indra, O great hero, I shall take great pleasure in offering my body to other living entities, such as jackals and vultures. I shall thus be relieved of my obligations to the reactions of my karma, and my fortune will be to receive the dust from the lotus feet of great devotees like Narad Muni. Right? We never hear Indra talk like this. Srila Prabhupada comments, A Vaishnava always desires the dust of the lotus feet of previous acharyas and Vaishnavas. Vritrasura was certain that he would be killed in the battle with Indra because this was the desire of Lord Vishnu. He was prepared for death because he knew that after his death he was destined to return home back to Godhead. This is a great destination and is achieved by the grace of a Vaishnava. Chariya Vaishnava Seva Nishtar Payeche Keva. No one has ever gone back to Godhead without being favored by a Vaishnava. In this verse, right, so it's not just Krishna, it's the devotees. By being favored by the devotees, that's how we go back to Godhead. Right? Because for favored by the devotees, that pleases the Lord, therefore you go back to Godhead. Because only Krishna can take you back to Godhead. Right? He's Mukunda. But when you serve the Vaishnavas, that's when Krishna is actually pleased. That's how we actually go. In this verse, therefore, we find the words Manasvinam para raja prapatsye. I shall receive the dust of the lotus feet of great devotees. The word Manasvinam refers to great devotees who always think of Krishna. They are always peaceful, thinking of Krishna, and therefore they are called Dhira. The best example of such a devotee is Narad Muni. If one receives the dust of the lotus feet of a Manasvi, a great devotee, he certainly returns home back to Godhead. Sri Ritrasura continued, O king of the demigods, since I, your enemy, am standing before you, why don't you hurl your thunderbolt at me? Although your attack upon me with your club was certainly useless, like a request of money from a miser, the thunderbolt you carry will not be useless. You need have no doubts about this. 19. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Just as you desire to live and enjoy the happiness of Swarga, I desire to die and serve the lotus feet of the Lord in Vaikuntha. Right? He wants to live, stay in the material world, enjoy Swarga. Ritrasura wants to die, go back to Godhead, and serve the Lord in Vaikuntha. Both your desire and my desire should be fulfilled. Right? You know, because the two go together. Why do you delay in killing me? That is expressed in this verse. When will I become the target of the thunderbolt? I am right in front of you now with no opposition. Right? Because there's no other demigods, demons there that he has to fight with first. Indra might think, but throwing the thunderbolt at your big body may also be fruitless. To which Vrishtrasura responds, the thunderbolt is never without result. Amogham. Indra doubts, what will I do if the thunderbolt ends up in your hands like my club and is used to attack me? To which Vrishtrasura assures, do not have doubt. The thunderbolt will not be without effect. It will not be like requesting something from a miser. So he's trying to convince him, because otherwise he doesn't have that faith. He has no experience. He just thinks it's another weapon. But the point is because it has the Lord's potency in it, you know, with the Lord's blessing, it's much more powerful than any weapon that the demigods will have. Right? Of course, any weapon has the Lord's potency in it. But that's like everything does. You know what I'm saying? The snail, you know, to crawl across your lawn has the Lord's potency in him to be able to do that. Right? So the Lord's potency is in everything, but this is special because it had the Lord's blessings. Srila Prabhupada adds, when King Indra threw his club at Ritrasura, Ritrasura caught it in his left hand and retaliated by using it to strike the head of Indra's elephant. Thus Indra's attack was a disastrous failure. Indeed, Indra's elephant was injured and thrown back 14 yards. Therefore, you know, you can imagine an elephant flying, you know, Airavata, right? He's a big elephant. He's got four tusks. He's not a small elephant, right? So he's a male elephant and he goes to war. So that means he's a war elephant, which means even bigger. And then going, you know, flying that much distance, that's a lot. Right? So. Therefore, even though Indra stood with the thunderbolt to hurl against Ritrasura, he was doubtful, thinking that the thunderbolt might also fail. Ritrasura, but that's the point, his weapon failed before, that's why they got this weapon. Ritrasura, however, being a Vaishnava, assured Indra that the thunderbolt would not fail, for Ritrasura knew that it had been prepared in accordance with the instructions of Lord Vishnu. Although Indra had doubts because he could not understand that Lord Vishnu's order never fails, Ritrasura understood Lord Vishnu's purpose. Ritrasura was eager to be killed by the thunderbolt manufactured according to Lord Vishnu's instructions, because he was sure that he would thus return home back to Godhead. Right? Because if he's being killed under that orders of the Lord, then surely he's going to go back to Godhead. Right? You know, if he was, you know, caught up with something in his mind like that on, you know, whether he should go to the market now and pick up the potatoes or whether he should go to the, you know, pick up the dry cleaning first, and he steps off the curb and then gets run over by a Mack truck. That's another thing, right? But here, this is the arrangement of the Lord, right? No? Yes. Okay. He was simply waiting for the opportunity of the thunderbolts being released. In effect, therefore, Ritrasura told Indra, if you want to kill me, since I am your enemy, take this opportunity, kill me. You will gain victory and I shall go back to Godhead. Your deed will be equally beneficial for both of us. Do it immediately. Because that's what he wants. Indra will get his position and Ritrasura will get what he wants. Ritrasura continued, O Indra, king of heaven, The thunderbolt you carry to kill me has been empowered by the prowess of Lord Vishnu and the strength of Dadichi's austerities. Right? So the Lord and the devotee. Since you have come here to kill me in accordance with Lord Vishnu's order, there is no doubt that I shall be killed by the release of your thunderbolt. Lord Vishnu has sided with you. Therefore, your victory, opulence, and all good qualities are assured. 20. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Dhritarasura encourages Indra by speaking about the cause of the weapon's infallibility. The weapon has been sharpened by the power of Lord Vishnu and the austerity of Dadichi. Inspired by Vishnu, Vishnu Yantri Taha, kill me. When Vishnu sides with a person, there will be victory, wealth, and good qualities. Right? That's what that is stated, Sanjaya states in the Gita. Whichever side Krishna is on, then that side will have victory, wealth, and good qualities. Sorry? That's wealth. And? And?
That's what I said.
Victory, opulence, and?
Morality.
So that's the good qualities. So you understand? So it's always these three. You know, whether you call wealth or opulence, whether you say good qualities or morality, you know, so that it means that those will always be there. That always goes with Krishna. Srila Prabhupada adds, but can't Krishna be on all the sides?
Then they both be victorious.
Was Dhritarasura not victorious? Was Indra not victorious? So both were victorious.
Yeah,
it just appears that from the mundane that one's victorious and one's not. Everybody gets what they want. So if their desire is in accordance with what Prabhupada said and to please Prabhupada and Krishna, then they'll be victorious. But if it's for some other purpose, but they're turning to Krishna for that, then they will get whatever it is, even though it may be something not, it may not be pure devotion. But they'll get it. So the point is, you know, just because these things happen doesn't mean that we don't stick to pure devotion. Right? You know, Dhritarasura could complain that, you know, he's ended up as a demon, now he's going to be killed by Indra. You know, what's going on here? But he just sees the opportunity to go back to Godhead, so he's not worried. Is that
Can we say that realized in the Godhead that we have no place in the, for example, in the holy man that can do communicating and do
that? And that means that just that much, or there's something more? Just that. The point is the principle of pure devotion and mixed devotion, that's what we apply. You know, it's not necessarily that, you know, only if you have an elephant waiting outside to take you after you leave the class, then you can compare yourself to Indra.
Lack of faith.
It's not a matter of lack of faith. He has some faith, but he just doesn't have enough. So his faith is mixed. He's Sakam Bhakta. Right? But Dhritarasura is a Shuddha Bhakta, Akam Bhakta, so he doesn't have any desire. So that point we can apply to our devotional service. We have that faith in the Lord and are not interested in the mundane, then we'll get that. But if we are interested in the mundane, we have the Sakam, we'll get that. But then the problem is we'll get that, but where will we get that? We'll get it here, not there. You know, there's a good chance that Amazon does not, you know, deliver in the spiritual world. Huh? You know what I'm saying?
But if the desires are mixed.
Mixed means then you get, though it means you'll move forward in devotional service, but not as quickly because you were being held back by the part that's mixed. And that part that's mixed we get, but by receiving that, then we have to see what will happen. Are we going to get distracted or not? So Denli Krishna doesn't give us things that will distract us, but it's not that we can't get distracted anyway. Yeah. So it's just a matter of Krishna's determination against our determination. Ultimately, Krishna's going to win because he's unlimitedly determined while we're pretty small, and at some point we give up.
That's what I'm saying, but he's been determined longer than that because he's been, you know, Paramatma, he's been with us the whole time. So therefore, then, you know, he's going to stick around. And it's not, we're thinking, well, you know, I'm like that, but there's unlimited living entities and Krishna's with each one of them. So therefore, you know, how you say? Ultimately, house wins. So it's just a matter of which house. Is it going to be the spiritual house or material house? Yeah. Ultimately, everyone goes back to Godhead. But it's just a matter of, you know, do we want to spend more time, you know, in that arrangement? Does that make sense?
Srila Prabhupada adds, Vritrasura not only assured King Indra that the thunderbolt was invincible, but also encouraged Indra to use it against him as soon as possible. Vritrasura was eager to die with the stroke of the thunderbolt sent by Lord Vishnu, so that he could immediately return home back to Godhead. By hurling the thunderbolt, Indra would gain victory and enjoy the heavenly planets, remaining in the material world for the repeated birth and death. Indra wanted to gain victory over Vritrasura and thereby become happy, but that would not at all be happiness. The heavenly planets are just below Brahmaloka. But as stated by the Supreme Lord, Supreme Lord Krishna, Abrahma Bhuvanal Loka Punar Avartinor Juna. Bhagavad Gita 8:16. Even if one achieves Brahmaloka, he must still fall to the lower planetary systems again and again. However, if one goes back to Godhead, he never returns to this material world. By killing Vritrasura, Indra would not actually gain. He would remain in the material world. Vritrasura, however, would go to the spiritual world. Therefore, victory is destined for Vritrasura, not for Indra. So, the victory is there for whoever it is, like you're saying, all these different parties. The different parties will gain their victories. But the point is do they actually gain victory? So Indra gained the victory that he wanted, but actually he was not victorious because he stayed here. Does that make sense? So that's why we stick to what the acharyas recommend. Try to understand this. You know, take that mood, understand it according to the mood. Does that make sense? Now, if you're dealing with transcendental position and there's different viewpoints on that, that's also not a problem because everyone's an individual. So there's different ways to please. Like in Braja, everybody's got a different idea how to serve. Cowherd boys that stay out and play all day. Mother Yashoda doesn't seem to agree with that. Krishna's got to come in sometime, take his bath and eat. Right? The gopis would stay out dancing all night. In fact, it would just stay night. The sun would never come up. But then, you know, does that make sense? You know, so everybody always wants, so there's different opinion in pleasing Krishna. But it's about Krishna's pleasure. So as long as it's on the position of pure devotion, it doesn't matter if there's difference of opinion, because technically there's not. It's all about Krishna's pleasure. It's only when there's something else there, that's when there's actually a difference. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
The body doesn't decide
because it's been ordained by Vishnu, so then it should happen. Vishnu said that this thunderbolt will kill Vritrasura, so therefore then following the order of Vishnu means catch these things. Don't just, in other words, I say that, don't keep going back to the thing, no, because the point is there is there. In other words, he doesn't want to die because it's a problem in the material world. So he doesn't want to live because of karma. He doesn't want to die because of liberation. He just wants to serve the Lord. So by going back to Godhead, he can serve, then that's what he'll do. So one has to understand what it means. Because why do people want to die? Right? The situation's not nice. They want to get out of it. So he doesn't want that. So the situation's a difficulty. He doesn't care. But it's not that he wants to live because there's something beneficial. He simply wants to serve the Lord. So, okay.
Yeah, going to say that the detail was on the same platform as Vipassura, or not necessarily?
It appears so.
Because Vipassura was a devotee, but the detail was more like...
It doesn't specifically say it, just because he absorbed himself in thinking of the Lord. So then, you know, he went like that. He may have been, you know, had that yogic aspect to him, but it didn't mean that he... Because yoga is what you use to meditate on the Lord. It's just whether you want to go through the whole Ashtanga system or just by bhakti just remember the Lord.
Because my point is that when we say that the yogi, he's actually on the Brahma-Buddha platform, he doesn't care if he reads the Gita.
Yes.
With the Sura, he's not on that platform because he is on the devotional platform. He wants to serve the Lord. And that's his desire.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes, you could say like that, that it's beyond that position of the liberated. But at the same time, is there's also the point, as he pointed out, that Vishnu had ordained it. Yes, for Vritrasura. And also for Dadichi. So they're quite happy, these two. Okay. So it's in...
Because when you speak about yogis who desire liberation, they still think about themselves.
Yes.
The bodies, but the soul.
Yes.
Still.
Yes. 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 They're still worried because they're interested in liberation. That's for them. They may have given up the attachment to the body because it gives trouble, but they're not. They haven't given up the attachment that I will enjoy. But because their absorption in Brahman, where is the Lord involved in it? They're in Brahman, which is the Lord, but where is the relationship with the Lord? So it's not about the Lord; it's about themselves. They think I am Brahman. Well, the devotee will be thinking that it's about the Lord's pleasure. So, therefore, it's the Lord's pleasure that the pastime unfolds like this. It's also the Lord's pleasure that now these two devotees come back to Him and render service in the spiritual world. So then they want to take part. So the point is we're here. It hasn't been ordained. You know, I don't think Indra's come to Lord Vishnu and says, you know, that's it, I can't tolerate it, any more of this, you know, burnt rice and half-cooked potatoes, you know, you got to get rid of this person, right, you know, does that make sense? You know, so, therefore, it's not, so therefore, we don't desire to die, we don't desire to live, it's just a matter we serve Krishna, you know, is that, yeah. Vritrasura continued. By the force of your thunderbolt, I shall be freed of material bondage and shall give up this body and this world of material desires. Fixing my mind upon the lotus feet of Lord Sankarsana, I shall attain the destination of such great sages as Narad Muni, just as Lord Sankarsana has said. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Indra thinks, Vritrasura is cheating me. He will make the thunderbolt useless by displaying his powers and again attack me. So that's what he says. Then, do not think I will do this. Hear about my determination of mind. Just as my Lord Sankarsana has said, fixing my mind on his lotus feet, I will attain the destination of the yogis. My body, which is a material noose, should be cut by the force of your thunderbolt. I have renounced the wealth of the three worlds, apavida loka. Right, because he has the power to control the three worlds, but he's giving that up. So Indra is so attached to his power, but actually Vritrasura's power is much greater than Indra's. Because he being a pure devotee, then there's no obstacle to his power. But he's giving this up. Right? So he can go back to Godhead, and that way then Indra can enjoy his position. So that's it. And then ultimately then it's down to Krishna. We'll see who wins at the end. Right. Srila Prabhupada adds, the words aham samadhyaya mana indicate that the most important duty at the time of death is to concentrate one's mind. One can fix his mind on the lotus feet of Krishna, Vishnu, Sankarsana, or any Vishnu Murti. His life will be successful.
to be killed while fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Sankarsana, Dhritarasura asked Indra to release his Vajra, or thunderbolt. He was destined to be killed by the thunderbolt given by Lord Vishnu, right? So it's destined that it will happen. There's no question of its being baffled. Therefore, Dhritarasura requested Indra to release the thunderbolt immediately, and he prepared himself by fixing his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. Devotee is always ready to give up his material body, which is described herein as Gramya Pasha, the rope of material attachments. The body is not at all good. It is simply a cause of bondage to the material world. Unfortunately, even though the body is destined for destruction, fools and rascals invest all their faith in the body and are never eager to return home back to Godhead. So Dhritarasura is not like that. So, see, the problem comes up is, see, Indra may be overly clever or political and use tricks, but Dhritarasura is not. That's why he's saying that you hurled that, but Indra's thinking, why would he do that? Because I wouldn't do that. But if I was doing that, why would I be doing that? Because it's a trick. So that's why Dhritarasura is trying to show and then show, no, I'm fixing my, on the Lord and things like that. So he understands how he's a devotee. Because up to this point, he's spoken Dharma. So he has to accept him as a religious or even more religious person than he is. But now he's showing the point of the devotional service. Sri Dhritarasura continued. Persons who fully surrender at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead always think of his lotus feet are accepted and recognized by the Lord as his own personal assistants or servants. The Lord never bestows upon such servants the brilliant opulences of the upper, lower, and middle planetary systems of this world, material world. One possesses material opulence in any of these three divisions of the universe, his possessions naturally increases enmity, anxiety, mental agitation, pride, and belligerence. Thus one goes through much endeavor, to increase and maintain his possessions, and he suffers great unhappiness when he loses them. Right, so because of either there's so much endeavor to get them, then once you get them, then there's so much anxiety, endeavor to maintain, and then when one loses them, then there's so much anxiety again. So then that's the problem. So what comes easily without that, by the natural performance of your duties, you maintain it according to your duties, and if it stays, nice, and if it goes, what to do? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Listen, Indra, you and I are both devotees of the same Lord. He will give you enjoyment and wealth, but will not give me enjoyment and wealth. Here is the reason. Hear about the nature of my Lord. He does not give that wealth to persons who are dedicated completely to him. Why? From wealth comes hatred and other bad qualities which weaken the joy of bhakti. So therefore, only how much you can properly engage, and you do. Yudhishthira, he's an emperor. What we see is he was equipoised whether he had the full empire or whether he was out in the forest with nothing. Duryodhana, not having the empire, he's an anxiety. He gets the empire, he's an anxiety. Even up to the last moment, he's trying to hold on to it. Same with his father. Right? His father knows it's wrong, but he's still hoping maybe it'll work out. Srila Prabhupada adds, in Bhagavad Gita 4.11, the Lord says, Ye yatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham mama vartmanu vartante manushyaf partasarvasaha. As devotees surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects. O son of Prita, both Indra and Dhritarasura were certainly devotees of the Lord. Although Indra took instructions from Vishnu to kill Dhritarasura, the Lord was actually more favorable to Dhritarasura, because after being killed by Indra's thunderbolt, Dhritarasura would go back to Godhead, whereas the victorious Indra would rot in this material world. Because both of them were devotees, the Lord awarded them the respective benedictions they wanted. Dhritarasura never wanted material possessions, for he knew very well the nature of such possessions. To accumulate material possessions, one must labor very hard. And when he gets them, he creates many enemies because this material world is always full of rivalry. Even you get something nice, you endeavor to get something nice, when you get it, people then become envious and all that. Therefore, one has to be very careful. So, but we'll work within the duties and all that. Then, you know, like that. And then if you get, you don't talk about it. You don't make a scene about it. That's the culture. That's the etiquette. Everything's just very... If it's there, it's supposed to be, then it's there. It's not something special. Does that make sense? Then things go very nicely. But because everybody wants to show off, it's just like how many pictures on internet of somebody who went out someplace for dinner and that was a nice dinner and they take a picture of it and post it on the internet. You know? If it's nice, eat it. Be happy. Why do you have to put it on the internet? So everybody can get envious and you can get indigestion. Is that the whole point? Right? You know, so, yeah. If one becomes rich, his friends and relatives are envious. For Ekanta Bhaktas, unalloyed devotees, Krishna therefore never provides material possessions. A devotee sometimes needs some material possessions for preaching, but the possessions of a preacher are not like those of a karmi. A karmi's possessions are achieved as a result of karma, but those of a devotee are arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead just to facilitate his devotee's devotional activities. Because a devotee never uses material possessions for any purpose other than the service of the Lord, the possessions of a devotee are not to be compared to those of the karmi. Right? So therefore the devotee has, therefore they're not considered the same. But Indra's not seeing them like that in service of the Lord. He's seeing that his position of Indra, the facilities and all that, is something he wants to enjoy. Therefore there's getting this other reaction. But if the devotee sees everything in connection with the Lord, used for the Lord, sincerely, then there's not a problem. So the devotee gets things by the Lord's arrangement. So whether they stay, whether they don't, it's still the Lord's arrangement. Right? Is this making sense? Yes.
Wow.
Impressive. You have a twin. Because your twin left before. He was very busy. Wow, cool. Okay. Yeah. I met two brothers, devotees, in England. They're identical twins. So you tell the difference between one wears a blue border on his dhoti and one wears a green border. Like that. You know, once you know them, I guess you can tell the difference. Always. So that way you know the difference. Otherwise, most people can't tell the difference. Like that. So, like that. Okay, so you're wearing the green border. Okay. 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 Okay, so therefore we don't compare the possessions of the devotees to the karmis. So we don't say, oh, this is not, you know, good, this is not this and that. Point is, it's engaged in the Lord's service, what does it matter? It all belongs to Krishna anyway. Right? You know, so it would be better it's with the karmis? No, it doesn't matter. If the devotees can use it in the Lord's service, then it's used. Does that make sense? So the devotee has to make sure that he's using it in the Lord's service. That's the
Vitrasura continues to preach to Indra. Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. Right? So only how much is your duty, how much you're able to be Krishna conscious, that's how much you do. To go beyond to try to get more in Dharma, Artha, and Kama, that's a waste of time. Right? So it comes according to performing your duties in connection with Krishna, then that's what one is satisfied with. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gains. Right? So, therefore, Vritrasura can attain this, Indra will have problem because he's trying to get these things. Footnote 3. In his Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 47, Srila Jiva Goswami refers to this verse when he writes that the Supreme Personality of Godhead forbids his devotees from struggling to attain things that have no relation to him, as described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. This verse means, if an independent-minded devotee, Purushasya, strives to attain some material thing in the three worlds, Trivargikasya, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally creates obstacles, tad vighatam vidata, to prevent the devotee from attaining his desires. So in other words, we perform our duties. Now, if obstacles come up, we continue to perform our duties. But now, if we had an attachment for what we were trying to get, then we still perform our duties in connection with the Lord, but then that attachment, that thing, will go down. It has to go. Right? Or we see as I'm striving for something that's a bit beyond my duties or unnecessary. It may be within my duties, but not necessary. Then he'll give that up because the obstacles come up. The word akinchana gochara means that if the devotee strives to attain material pleasures or non-devotional liberation, the Lord creates obstacles to stop the devotee. The word akinchana means pure devotee. This has already been explained in the Bhakti Sandarbha. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates, having told you the method of killing me to take me to the side of the Lord, you should consider that you do not have the mercy of the Lord, since he will give you wealth and enjoyment. He obstructs the sincere devotee, Purushasya, from endeavoring for Artha, Dharma, and Kama. If the Lord stops those endeavors, one can infer that to be the Lord's mercy. But we have not had such an experience, maybe the doubts. Then it said, it is rare for anyone except those who are solely dedicated to the Lord. Therefore, it is unattainable to you. Completely devoid of his mercy, you will obtain wealth. Believing you will attain wealth, quickly throw the thunderbolt at me. So then here's another aspect, is that those who have that unalloyed devotion to the Lord, then the Lord stops all of their attempts at wealth. But us who are mixed devotees, then we may get what we're looking for. And get distracted. So therefore he said, since you want that, hey, go for it. Like that. But he's stopping that in me because I am simply fully surrendered to him. Right. So that makes sense. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Like, it's just a matter of the relation which you established with Lord, because of which he involves in your life.
He's always involved. It's just a matter of he involves himself, how much you're interested in him being involved. You're not interested much, and he's not much involved. You're interested more, he involves more.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitai Gaura Premanandi.